Jim, 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 Jim,
Jim, Jim,
Jim, Jim, Jim, Jim, Jim, Jim,
it's not till this time where like a lightning bolt from the gods, the skies open up and that lightning bolt hits me between the shoulders and gives me the charisma that makes it able for only someone as talented as myself to get you through 4 hours of the excitement of me talking. Turn your radio, you got your radio if you check it out. You got the treble, you got the bass, and you've got the charisma knob. You might want to grab that knob right now and turn it down to 8 because I don't want to blow your car speaker. Oh, Taco Bell is bringing back the Enchirado. They got rid of it 20 years ago. I was a huge fan. It is exactly like the other 62 things on their menu, made of the exact same ingredients. In New Jersey, a woman found her bank account was overdrawn. This is a story from last week. Only overdrawn $100 billion. Of course, it was an error. Although at first she thought, wait a second, did I go to Whole Foods and buy 3 things? Today is National Wine Day. I call it Pierre Poilievre Day. Different wine. I love the gurgly wurglies, and researchers say eating fish can increase your sex drive. Eating fish can increase your sex drive. Except if you're second, third, fourth date was at Red Lobster. I don't mean that in a bad way. I love Red Lobster. I just mean it might not be the most romantic place for a date. You guys are awful. I'm Jim Richards.
News Talk Tonight is on with your host, Jim Richards, on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
All sorts of police and photo ops. You know, the one police officer is giving a big speech and there's like 9 other police officers standing. And now there's thousands of them, I exaggerate to make my point, standing in the background trying to make a point that we're taking street racing really seriously. It's a problem in the summertime in many cities across this country. And if there's anything I know about street racing, and I do know a lot, but I'm looking for an expert right now. If you're one of the street racers, they're huge talk radio fans. You know, they just get in their muscle car and they crank up talk radio, News Talk 1010 in Toronto. They crank it to the hilt. I know right now, they might not be listening to me right now because they're probably listening to the Vashi Capello's podcast. So if you know anybody who is, I'd love to do a behind the scenes, ladies and gentlemen, a behind the scenes, a conversation with people who know about street racing. By the way, we did have a behind the scenes earlier today. We're going to talk about what the hell is a Rex block and what is it doing with our weather later on with Environment Canada's Dave Phillips. But here's a little behind the scenes of Dave Phillips and Jim Richards.
Thank you, Jim. Bye-bye now.
Take care. Have a great week.
That's it, folks. Just us, just being very friendly.
Thank you, Jim. Bye-bye now.
Take care. Have a great week.
All right. The behind the scenes stuff as you usually get here from News Talk Tonight. Oh, nobody heard that? Oh, the volume on my computer. Okay, let me.
Thank you, Jim. Bye bye now.
Take care. Have a great week.
All right, great stuff.
Jim Richards has issues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Here's our issues we're looking at today. Vashi Capellas with a very interesting interview with the Canadian Mortgage Housing Corporation's chief economist yesterday, because Canadian households have more in debt in their house than most Western countries, but specifically than every other G7 country. Why is Canada different? Here's the chief economist for, again, the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation.
Well, I'm not sure that we can completely explain the difference, but an important fact is that the Americans got a nasty shock in 2008, and so they've been really trying to reduce their debt since then. And house prices have gone up in the U.S., but not markedly so. I think the core thing that we identify in Canada is this absence of housing supply. This is leading to a complete lack of affordability of the housing system in Canada.
And thus, you get in bidding wars and you get in positions where you don't necessarily have the money, but you really want to have a house, and you get in trouble with your mortgage. He also goes on to say, well, you know what? People shouldn't freak out about renting, because renting is no problem.
There is absolutely nothing wrong with renting. Actually, if you have a rental place at the moment, your rents are probably facing rent control, and so your rents are not going to go up dramatically.
The problem is, though, if you try to find a place right now, I know in Toronto, it's like through the roof for a one bedroom. You're looking at $2,500, $2,800. I know people looking for places right now. So I get his point that you're in better shape if you're already renting. But if you're moving into a new place, then you're in trouble. So if we do have all of this debt in our homes, what's the worst case scenario?
Well, there are many risks. The obvious one is that interest rates are going up, as many Canadians know. So when they debt rolls over into a new mortgage, the interest rate will go up if they're on a fixed mortgage. If they're on a variable, obviously they've already started to see higher mortgage payments. And this is going to crimp their spending. We're already seeing prices of all sorts of goods and services go up. And so with higher interest rates, it's just going to compound the problem that they have of making ends meet.
So this doesn't sound like a really nice scenario for anybody. And thus this warning from the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation. Again, the gentleman that we're listening to is the economist for them. So if they're coming out and warning us, does that mean that they think it's imminent?
Well, we're not seeing too many negative signs at the moment, but this is why we're trying to get out ahead of the problem. The job market has stayed fairly strong, and so Canadians more or less are able to service their debts. And obviously paying their mortgage is going to be their top priority. There are some warning signs out there, some credit card debt, car loan debt. There's some risks in or arrears in that area, but we're concerned about what might happen if the economy were to slow down further.
So let's cross our fingers and hope that that doesn't happen. He says the one thing that could remedy this is building more homes. Now, that doesn't mean there are plenty of places to build homes. Even in southern Ontario, even when Doug Ford says that we need the Greenbelt, that is not true, 100% not true. But we do need to build more homes. This is our issues segment off the top. We talked yesterday about the passing of Tina Turner. She was friends with Cher, and Cher talked about how ill she was the last time she visited her friend.
I started going to visit her, and it made her happy. And someone said, Jeff said, when you two laugh together, it is the funniest thing that you can ever possibly want to hear, because we both have such distinct laughs. But she was really happy. And like the first time I went, she was laying on this little chaise that she looks out at the lake with. And she was very kind of Camille, and laying there. And it's like, and she said, I can't spend too much time. And then 5 hours later, we were laughing like crazy, and she wanted to get up and show everything that she'd bought in her house. And boy, there were no surfaces in that house. But, she was having a good time in spite of the fact that she was really sick.
So, again, our behind the scenes is with David Phillips. Here's David Phillips, me behind the scenes.
Thank you, Jim. Bye-bye now.
Take care. Have a great week.
He is the chief environmentalist. Sorry, the chief with Environment Canada. And he's going to talk about what a Rex block is a little bit later on. And we'll find out if anybody's excited about Ron DeSantis running. We talked to our friend, former talk radio host Joe Walsh, about that. And we'll feature more of that a little bit later on.
Frisco, we haven't banned the book. We're just not allowing it for grade twos. Oh, yeah. Well, you can be a grade two, black person and live.
Okay. That's a clip of the interview of me talking. Straight ahead here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network, it's The Rundown.
What about an inquiry into how Richards got this job? Now that would serve the nation. It's News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
And thank you very much for your time this afternoon. We're going to have Environment Canada's Dave Phillips come out a little bit later on. Our weather in Quebec and also in Ontario is going to be really good over the next little while. But the reason is something called the Rex Block. What the hell? Sorry. What the heck is that? We'll find out later on the show, and we'll find out why Air Canada had to ground some of its flights. That was John Tory Jr., who will stick around after the rundown. He joins us right now. He is an airline expert and political commentator. Braden Akers is an associate principal at Navigator. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, Jim.
It looks right now like the that people are trying to get the special rapporteur,
something called a rapporteur,
to testify before MPs on the foreign interference report. I'm not sure why that would be a bad idea, although I'm still kind of not sure why Pierre Poilievre. I don't know. Seems like the dumbest thing ever. I don't want to know information about the protecting of our democracy. I shouldn't know that. I only want to be the prime minister, but I digest. Should David Johnston, Braden, be in front of the MPs at a foreign interference committee?
Yeah, I think so. I think he already agreed to it, actually. So good for him. I'm not sure what else he's going to say. Like, I think he said a lot of things already and found a lot of what I would describe disturbing things that are going, or not things that aren't happening in our government, like, you know, the Minister of Public Safety not checking his secret email, of which he gets briefings from CSIS. But, you know, I think that, you know, the parliamentarians have a right to ask him questions and about his conclusions and his recommendations, and they should definitely go do it.
Yeah, you're right. They were talking about whether or not he should go in front of them earlier today, and now I just wonder at this point, it's just going to be a show, right? Nobody's going to come out of this and go, yeah, you know what? Totally changes the way I think about it, John.
Yes, for the simple reason that they sort of hinted at it with respect to the various leaders testifying. They can't, for national security reasons, they're not going to be able to reveal anything specific, and they won't be able to say anything that reveals how they actually got that information. And so it's going to be really boring. There's going to be a lot of certain indications were that X, or we were led to believe that Y. It's not going to be what people think. And I think this is the whole reason that some people with a bit of inside knowledge are saying that a full-blown inquiry might actually be a waste of money, because they won't be able to pierce the veil, so to speak.
I like this report, although, you know, when you think about it, I don't know if it's that shocking. It's about young adults. And although these are American numbers, I'm not sure that they would be that different here in Canada. Young adults are taking longer to reach these life key milestones. But what they go by is what people were doing in 1980 when they were 21 versus what they're doing today when they are 21. As an example, first job, 64% of people by the age of 21 in 1980 had their first job. That compares to 39% now. Financial independence. Back then, 42% were financially independent of their parents at the age 21. Now it's only 25. First apartment, 62% had their first apartment by the age 21 in 1980. Now it's 51%. Married, 32% were married by the age of 21 in 1980. Now it's 6%. First child, back in 1980, it was 18%. Now it's 6%. Like, some of those are probably good things, you know, a first. I'm not saying anybody who has a child at 21 that is a bad thing, but I think there's a lot of people still trying to find their the right lane, Braden, in order to figure out what they want to do with their life at 21, let alone deciding to have a kid. But Is there anything concerning there? I mean, other than things just became a hell of a lot more expensive. So maybe just as in sports, you don't compare Jordan to LeBron James. Maybe we shouldn't be comparing eras, and it doesn't tell us anything, Braden.
Maybe, you know, I'm 35 and still trying to figure out my life. So I don't know. These poor 21-year-olds, I totally get it. But I think, like, the big thing here, you've already hit on it. It's the cost of living. Like, a lot of these milestones only occur when you move out of your parents' basement. Like, it's pretty hard to get married and have a kid when you live in the basement of your parents. It's just, it's not going to happen. Financially independent, like, it's harder now than I think it's ever been before in terms of, you know, your salary is just not keeping pace with what you need to do, what you need to spend money on to live. So yeah, it's just a lot tougher for kids these days.
It's like screaming at a kid for, like, somebody in their 30s or even their 40s, like, hey, I had a home when I was 40. Why don't you have a home? Well, when you had a home, what, homes were what, $200,000? And now they're 1.3 in some big cities. What about you, John?
Yeah, I mean, I also think that it's interesting. It's a combination of some things getting a lot more expensive and some things getting a lot less expensive. So when you look compared to 40 years ago, the odds that somebody would, say, own a new car was very low. But consumer leasing has made that very reachable. The cost of travel has gone down so considerably, and there's so much more competition and choice that people are also choosing to spend their money on that, as opposed to, frankly, 40 years ago, you finished school and that was just kind of what you did next, especially if you were Canadian or from some of the sort of cities in the middle of America. You settled down and you started a family because there wasn't anything else to do. Now for $800, you can see the world, or for $300 or $400, you can lease a car and you can just go and do whatever you like. So there's also a lot more independence. And I think just an overall, I agree with Braden that the cost of things has made some of those big milestones hard to achieve or impossible. But it's also, there's a lot more choice with what to do with those scarce dollars at young ages.
If you're keeping track, by the way, John agreed with Braden, who agreed with me. So we're all on the same page on that one. There's a video that shows a loss prevention officer struggling with a shoplifter at a Winners in store in downtown Toronto. Probably these things are a dime a dozen. And I'm not sure, I'd love people in retail to tell me if the policy had changed. The policy used to be, and you used to see it in liquor stores in the Toronto area, some guy would come in with a duffel bag, put three bottles of Grey Goose in it, and just walk out. And people would be, the most they would do is like, hey, I see you. I remember that happened. But a homeless woman I saw yesterday being wrestled to the ground by people at Shoppers Drug Mart in Toronto at Queen and Carlaw. And I was like, okay, guys, I think she just wanted to have something to eat. And I'm not sure if it's worth, you know, doing that. But how much force should be used by loss prevention? Do you guys have thoughts on that? What about you, John?
I generally don't think a lot of force should be used unless the person who they're trying to stop is actually posing a physical threat to other people. I'm sort of a believer that property is insured, and you're often dealing with people who have mental health issues, and sort of restrain where possible. But, you know, private loss prevention needs to be very careful too, because they don't have the same immunities and protections that proper law enforcement has. So yep, if they do cause injury to someone, and if it's inappropriate in proportion, they can be charged. And so they should just back off, observe, and wait for the real cops.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if the policy has changed, because I think for a lot of these retailers, now nobody is going to really care about a big grocery store seeing some of the profits that they've made, Braden. But, you know, since the pandemic, shoplifting has skyrocketed.
Yeah, totally. The losses through shoplifting are passed on to everyone else, right? Like, that's something to keep in mind. And you also have to think, rather than just the big chains, what about the small mom and pop stores, right, that are experiencing this and maybe don't have this private security or the, you know, the cameras in place to sort of follow up on these incidents. So we got to do what we can to stop them.
All right. Just because there's music playing doesn't mean the excitement of Braden and John and I and our talking won't continue. It will in a matter of moments, along with their final takes. It's The Rundown. I'm Jim Richards on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Find out why Air Canada had to ground many of their flights coming up before 8 o'clock. John Tory Jr. is with us. He's an airline industry expert and political commentator. Also, Braden Akers is with us as well. He is an associate principal at Navigator. So things are changing so quickly when it comes to AI and ChatGPT. More Canadians' privacy are being infringed. I don't even think they know. Privacy authorities investigating ChatGPT's use of personal information. I mean, the more and more we are going along on this ride and finding out what this AI can do, it seems like we're going to be late to the dance with the guardrails on where it can go. And I guess we live and learn like we have with the internet and laws, but some of this stuff I think is pretty concerning, and there's reason to be concerned about this, Braden.
Yeah, totally. I think we've unleashed a beast here and we're not sure where it's going to go. The US is, I think, looking at regulating it. I'm not sure where we are at as a country, to be honest, but you know, I think that we don't know where this will end up and we should be concerned. And you know, not to sound like an old person, like on the eve of the internet when it came out, I just don't know where this will go in terms of jobs, in terms of our economy. And I think we have a right to be concerned.
There's a old video of, well, I don't know how old it was, but it was around the dawn of the internet, and David Bowie was being interviewed. So it is, what, like 25 years old. David Bowie's being interviewed saying how fascinated he is by it because it's going to be good. And the guy's like, yeah, it's going to be great. And he says, well, it also could bring a lot of bad things, as we have seen. And that, I think it took us maybe 20 years to realize, oh, yeah, I don't know if anybody was saying that 20 years ago, but here I think everybody's on the same page going, okay, what have we unleashed, John?
Yeah, and I think, because I think this is the first, you know, the more human-like it becomes, the more we can appreciate, we as people can appreciate the power of it. I mean, the computers and technology and the and processing power has been very strong for a long time, but this is the first time it's really approximated human behavior, and we realize, as we should be reminded daily, of our fallibility as people. But it's right in front of us. You know, you say, write me a story the way Jim Richards would talk, and it just does that, and you realize, man, this is scary stuff. You know, my old man saying that I come back to all the time is to remind you, when it comes to giving up information and putting things online, if the product is free, you're the product.
Yeah, well said. So I think this goes right across the network. Now, not this specific thing that we're going to talk about, but transit systems rightfully have tried to become more accessible. We see it in Toronto, but one of the problems in Toronto is, like, you can get on a bus or a streetcar with ramps, and that is fantastic, but try to find a subway place that has a elevator. So it's not, I mean, it's just a mess when it comes. I feel really bad for anybody who has to rely on transit and is disabled, but we have Wheel-Trans, and probably every city wherever you're listening right now has something similar, and it's run by your local transit agency. Sometimes it could be just some guy who got his minivan retrofitted and they'll qualify. But the terrible thing is about this is, if you have a friend who's disabled and you're like, hey, spur of the moment, you want to go to a movie or dinner? And they have to, like, almost like make an appointment. I'm exaggerating to make my point, but they have to make an appointment like a week ahead. So in Toronto right now, they're asking everybody to re-qualify for Wheel-Trans. And that is because of the reason that I just mentioned, because normal transit is becoming more and more accessible. But there are some people who are upset about the fact that they have to re-qualify. I get it. It's probably, John, a bit of a pain in the butt, but I think it's the necessary thing to do.
Yeah, and it's the necessary thing. It was like Braden was saying about when there's theft and how it affects everybody. The same thing happens. It's a very scarce resource and it's a high cost. It should be provided. the disability accessible transit like Wheel-Trans, but every now and then there needs to be some sort of audit that gets run that says to make sure that we're delivering the right level of service to the right people. And like it or not, there are people out there who will abuse that. The same people will abuse disabled parking spaces. The same people will abuse tax credits that are for people who are suffering from a disability. And so if in order to maintain the service at the level it needs to be, which it sounds like is also a bit of a struggle, they need to, the transit agency or whatever agency they've hired to oversee it needs to be able to ask people from time to time, do you still qualify, especially if they're making ongoing modifications to the system to open up accessibility to the more fixed system, the regular system, as we call it.
Yeah, I mean, it's also a good way to audit to figure out how well you've done in trying to reimagine a transit system that is more inclusive for everybody. You might be looking back and like, we did all of these things and we still have this many people relying on Wheel-Trans. I mean, not that anybody's trying to bail on Wheel-Trans, but I would hate to have a bureaucrat, Braden, telling somebody what it's like to live like that and say, hey, you're disqualified despite what your doctor might say.
I think that's an interesting point, right? Like, I hope the bureaucrats are making the right decisions with this paperwork. I really hope our society isn't full of jerks who are abusing the system. Like, it's pretty low to use the Wheel-Trans transit if you're an able-bodied person, because, you know, you don't want to take the subway or something like that.
Yeah.
You want to be dropped off. I hope that's not happening. And I think that this is maybe just a little bit extra paperwork that we shouldn't be doing. And that's my view. I disagree with John. Sorry, John.
I got to say, though, you know, at least, you know, talking to disabled people, I know that the system, as good as it might be, Wheel-Trans is... Again, if you said to your disabled friend, let's go to a movie, can you get Wheel-Trans in an hour? They're like, no, we got a book. I don't know how far in advance, but you don't have a very spontaneous life. So I don't know anybody who'd be like, oh, screw normal transit and getting me around at a half decent rate. I'd rather go with this archaic system where I'm stuck because I didn't call, you know, 2 days ago to book a Wheel-Trans to pick me up at 2:30 in the afternoon at a certain intersection. All right, let's get to the final takes for today. I wanted to get to this left turn one, but I think we've run out of time. Let's get to our final takes of the day. John Tory Jr. is a political commentator and airline industry expert. He's going to hang out and talk to us about Air Canada's difficulties today in a second. John, what's your final take?
So my take actually does relate a bit to airline travel and to the thing we were talking about on Thursday, whatever day it was, Jim, where we were talking about what people should do when their flights are disrupted. And again, it's a message that I've been sort of telling my friends and travelers for a few years now. Make sure you understand, please, people, buyers of travel, understand the terms and conditions on your ticket. Non-refundable means non-refundable. And, you know, again, a lot of people I can see just in discussion forums and in people who reach out to me are having trouble understanding why when they canceled their ticket last week, because there's a possible labor disruption, why can't they now get a refund? And again, if you book non-refundable, you don't get a refund other than some very, very narrow, explicit circumstances, yeah, which this wasn't. So that's my take.
Well, but also, like, I've just booked a ticket to go away, and I, you know, you're presented with that dilemma, and I'm like, do I want to spend a couple hundred bucks just in case something goes sideways? And I'm like, no, I'll take the credit instead. What about you, Braden?
My final take is congrats to the city of Calgary for seeing common sense and having some fireworks on Canada Day. Last week, they announced that they were canceling the fireworks because of reconciliation, which in my view is just a performative action. And I'm really happy that someone had the brains to make the right decision and celebrate Canada Day on July 1st.
I would agree with that. I'm not saying you're not. I'm fully down with trying to reconcile thing, but we have to, you know, try to figure out how we can do the most in doing that and still recognize that despite how we got here, we have a great country and we need to try to make it work for as many people as we possibly can.
Absolutely. We just shouldn't be canceling candidates.
Yeah. Well said. Braden Akers, thank you very much for your time. Associate Principal at Navigator. We'll talk about that Canada Day story and why Air Canada had to cancel a lot of their flights, ground them. John Tory Jr. is going to stick around for that. I'm Jim Richards on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
Recent study says younger people are more likely to believe in hell.
Oh boy.
And you are listening to it. Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Still to come on this broadcast, what is going on in Alberta with the election on the horizon? Also, what is a REX block? It's a weather system that will be affecting Quebec and Ontario. Find out about that later on in the show. And I'm going to tell you in a couple of seconds time why my head might explode when it comes to municipal politics. This one has to do with Toronto, but it could be when, you know, the city tells you, hey, just a reminder, don't let your dog bark in the dog park. That sort of stuff that is on the way here on the iHeartTalk Radio Network. As we mentioned moments ago, Air Canada was forced to ground its flights at one point earlier today, being Thursday, after suffering a internal tech issue. Flights were delayed at several airports as a result of a temporary technical issue with flight communications. As you may or may not know, our friend John Tory, who was just with us moments ago, is an airline industry expert and political commentator. Just in general, because there's not a lot of specifics here, John, but I just think that sometimes, hey, technical issue, let's flip the switch to the backup system and we're not going to have a problem. But I'm guessing that there's a reason that I'm not running an airline.
Right, that might be one of them. I think it's really clear that, you know, this doesn't sound like this was something grave, and I want listeners to know that the phenomenal safety record that the airline industry is proud of and able to have here in North America and around the world is because there are certain areas of safety on which companies, operators, pilots, everybody, airports just won't compromise. And that is built on layers of redundancy and being able to verify information. So there is no switch that an airline can push in their headquarters and that can affect the operational safety of any aircraft on any given day. There's no disable, there's no override. That's probably not what you're talking about here. What you're probably talking about here is some sort of reporting or communication system that updates in real time the status, position, et cetera, of the aircraft. And my guess would be something went wrong with it, and that because the airline in the short order couldn't determine exactly what it was, they said, rather than risk a further degradation of our ability to communicate, we're going to suspend our flying until we know what it was. And based on everything that I can find available, the outage last, or the ground stop as it's called, which is just when planes are on the ground, you keep them there, but yep, planes that are still flying continue as normal. It lasted no more than about an hour. So they likely did a quick check of their backup system or got the main system up and running, or determined there was no further threat and they were able to continue operating. And so that is the basis of flight safety. The basis of flight safety says whenever there is something that we're not sure about, we're going to stop introducing new factors. We're going to figure it out and we're going to work the problem. And only once we can be sure of our safety parameters are we going to resume.
Okay, so this is the part that I find interesting. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, issued a ground stop for Air Canada and Rouge flights to all destinations just before noon. So why isn't it the airline taking that initiative? And maybe there's a very good reason for that. And how integrated is the FAA with a airline's communications or technical issues that they would have been the one that have done that did that?
There are basically two aviation agencies around the world that are kind of central to what almost every airline deals with. It's either the FAA or the EASA, the European, or now the CAA in the UK, because they're separate again. And they're kind of the big three. So you ask, why would the airline communicate with the FAA? again, not knowing many of the details, it does seem like the airline was having a communications problem. So the simplest way to get the message out may have been just to call the FAA and ask them to use their communications network to broadcast a ground stop to all Air Canada aircraft, especially if Air Canada was having difficulty communicating, or at least trying to identify, maybe they didn't know if their communications were getting through at that particular time. And it's far easier than trying to email every crew or email every station manager, et cetera. If they don't know if the messages are getting through to the airplanes, then the easiest thing to do is to phone the people who oversee the airspace, essentially globally, and issue the ground stop. And it worked.
All right. John, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
John Torrey, who again is an airline industry expert and political commentator. We thank him for his time here on the iHeartTalk Radio Network. I want to talk to you about your property as a homeowner coming up after the top of the hour, 8 o'clock in the Eastern time zone. I know about time zones. That's one of the things that people are they rank me very highly. Because I know about the time zone. So I always like to say in 10 minutes rather than naming, hey, after 8 o'clock, because I don't know where people are listening right now. I know they're listening, but I don't know where, which reminds me, follow and subscribe to the podcast. But in Toronto, I don't want to get into the background of the fracases that I've had with this counselor, Shelley Carroll, because I've gone at it with her in the past. But she's got this idea now where, I mean, the government telling you what you can do on your property, like, I get it to a certain extent. Like, somebody's going to come around and, like, mow your lawn, and you're like, well, I have a wild garden. It's the way it's supposed to look like. That's wild grass. It's not normal grass. And they're like, well, the city doesn't like it. One of your neighbors complained. I am a big believer in it's your property to do the hell you want with it, but a lot of people will disagree with me. In Toronto, they're running this up the flagpole, that the city gets to decide how many signs you have on your front property. Now, if you have a sign that says, hey, school area, slow down, that's fine. But if you just got a renovation or a renovation is underway as well, you might not be able to have a slow down because the kids are playing in my front yard and a Hank's renovation sign. Like, who cares? Now, if you had one of those signs that we saw a lot of during COVID, my son and or daughter just graduated from blank secondary school, and you had two other ones, then you're cruising for a bruising with these people. But I don't see how anybody would care. I've got two signs on my front property. One at the beginning, on this like equal ends of the sidewalk, as somebody walks by on the sidewalk, it is, they look like they're real signs, traffic signs. But if you can imagine what John Cleese looks like while he's doing his silly walk, it says, you're entering silly walk zone. So on my Ring doorbell, I have videos of people doing all sorts of crazy walks across the front of my property. Now, there's two signs that the city of Toronto might not like, or any municipality for that matter. I want to play a clip for you of this councillor coming up after the news, and I want to ask you whether or not you think that that's a good idea. Because you could have, like, hey, my son or daughter graduated from whatever secondary school, that you support the green belt, or you support CTV. I don't want to say CBC because I see a lot of CBC signs. I support the CBC, don't defund them. You might see, hey, slow down, kids are playing, any number of different things. Should the city be able to tell you how many signs you have? Next. Can have? Next.